are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hopefully your week is going great so far. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. I had the orange chocolate cream this morning. It was fantastic. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order at BuiltBar.com. Today, we are going to continue our series. We're on week two now, focusing on the top moments in Minnesota Timberwolves franchise history. And following up what we did on Monday, I do want to expand a bit more into another one of the moments that I mentioned last week in our honorable mention nominees as part of the top five moments. Or actually, this one actually cracked the top five. It was number five. On Monday, we talked about the hiring of Rick Adelman, the Adelman era overall, with him as head coach of the Timberwolves. And that was an honorable mention from last week's list of top off-the-court moments in Wolves history. Today, I want to spend our episode mostly talking all things Ricky Rubio, the Rubio addition to the team when he was drafted in 09, his career, and obviously his arrival to the team prior to the lockout season, was number five on my top five off-the-court moments in Wolves history. But there's so much more to say about that entire saga and Rubio's career with the Wolves and everything that, you know, how David Kahn essentially hitched his career to Ricky Rubio and how that went for both of those guys and where we are now in that, I guess, the looking back on the Rubio era. Before we get into that, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnTWolves. That's at LockedOnTWolves. Don't forget the T. Before we get into Rubio, I did want to hit on some general notes related to the NBA, the pandemic, and just kind of where things stand. Not big news at all, but things that I thought were notable over the past couple of days. First of all, there were some comments made by, I think it was Mason Plumlee. I should probably get the Plumlee correct. Mason Plumlee, Nuggets big man, Mason Plumlee saying that everybody's optimistic was his quote, or his exact quote was, people are very optimistic that the season will be resumed and completed. And he was actually the Nuggets rep for the NBA Players Association as well. So he's privy to some information. He says they know they're going to play for TV. There's not going to be crowds. There's a variety of different proposals, which I don't know that we'd heard all of these yet, but there's talk of doing a, you know, obviously the one city format. We've talked about Disney's ESPN's Wide World of Sports at Disney in Florida, Las Vegas. There's also some two city proposals and also a three city proposal with 10 teams each to try and finish the season or perhaps do some sort of version of the playoffs. He doesn't go into the details on what the playoffs could look like. But I'm, as a Timberwolves fan, I'm crossing my fingers that perhaps there's some sort of tournament that happens and the Wolves are seated in this tournament and have a chance to, you know, play a game or three games or something to try and earn their way into some sort of playoff. I think that could be a lot of fun. Theoretically, we don't know this, but Karl Anthony Towns should be, if that's the scenario, he should be able to play. Obviously, D'Angelo Russell, it would give the Wolves, they've only played one game with Towns and Russell together on the floor. And that could be a really high stakes environment to try and get those guys out there. Nobody really knows what the ramp up period is going to be. It sounds like it'll be at least 2 weeks with a de facto sort of training camp situation. But the three city model is a really intriguing idea if the team can be or the league can be divided into three groups of 10. I think you'd almost have to jump right to some sort of playoff at that point, given that, you know, you're not going to be able to group like the Wolves. Say the Wolves were supposed to play another five games or whatever to finish out a season. How, you know, it's not going to look anything like the existing schedule that's being done away with. So it's going to have to be redone anyways. Maybe you have three little playoffs where there's team, you know, groups of 10 teams and maybe five teams emerge and there's, or I don't know, you know, five teams or six teams emerge from each one. And then maybe there's an 18 team playoff in one location or something like that. Think about this as a made for TV event should be a lot of fun to watch. And if there's some sort of stakes, for the Timberwolves and for every other team that wouldn't otherwise be in the playoff tournament and hopefully have no bearing on the draft position. Cause as of right now, the Wolves would be tied for the, with a 14% chance for the top pick. And if the Wolves could get into some sort of playoff tournament and still keep a top, what's likely to be a top three pick in the upcoming draft, that's a win-win for the Wolves. So here's hoping for some sort of solution like that. Obviously there's nothing concrete. This is just mostly speculation, I guess, educated speculation by Mason Plumlee. The other thing that's somewhat notable, we talked a few weeks back about the Big Three, the 3-on-3 tournament, the league that's headed up by Ice Cube. They had been talking about doing a quarantine reality style or reality show style 3-on-3 tournament, have everybody in house, have them live together, have individuals have their own record and play against each other, switch teams, et cetera. That's been postponed. They had been hoping to do it in May. They're pushing it back to August or September. And then instead of doing the regular season this summer, which is supposed to start end of June, it will start sometime in the fall or winter. It sounds like there's a quote coming out of the league that it's a very fluid situation. Unfortunately, it's not surprising that everything ends up getting postponed with that particular league, just kind of where everything's at. But it's too bad to hear that that's what's going to happen for sure. And unfortunately, that's just kind of where we are. And hoping that they can get something up and running, you know, it sounds like now it's going to be in the midst of whatever ends up happening with the NBA. So it's not the best case scenario for Ice Cube and for the Big Three league as a whole. But here's hoping that gets figured out, and that'll just be another form of entertainment of live sports that we haven't really had yet. That could be on TV for us to watch. In a minute here, we're going to cover Ricky Rubio overall, in his Timberwolves career. I want to talk through him as a prospect, kind of looking back. It's been a minute since at least since I had looked at his profile as a prospect and what people were saying about him pre-draft. I remember he was a YouTube sensation, and many people other than, prior to him being drafted, very few people, unless you're a draft prospect nerd or a European basketball nerd, were going to have seen him play in a live game. And so we'll talk a little bit about him and his draft prospects at the time, his selection by the Wolves, him coming over to the Timberwolves, and then how he fit as a rookie in the NBA, played for Rick Adaman, et cetera. So I want to talk through all those things here in just a minute. Before we do that, though, I did want to talk again about Built Bar. I mentioned Built Bar off the top. It is delicious. It's fantastic. I've tried a couple of different flavors now. I had the banana nut bread yesterday, and today enjoyed the chocolate orange cream. Was fantastic. If you've ever tried protein bars in the past, if this is something that you've been in that world, this tastes nothing like anything you've ever had before. It legitimately tastes like a candy bar. And that's not an exaggeration. It is the best tasting protein bar ever. Built Bar offers 16 amazing flavors. There are 8 chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate nut free flavors. The bars are 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew, almost like a chewy granola bar in some sense. They're great for health conscious folks. If you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to maintain weight while still indulging in a delicious treat, this is the bar for you. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein and high fiber. The profile of the orange chocolate cream that I had today, 110 calories, only 110 calories in this bar, 15 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of fat in this protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order of Built Bar. That's promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order at builtbar.com. Coming into the 2009 draft, Ricky Rubio was seen as almost a surefire top 3 or 4 pick. There were a lot of rumors that he was going to go to the Thunder at the number 3 pick in that draft. There were also some rumors that the Kings would take him at 4. I think that was the more likely scenario. As a prospect, Ricky Rubio was generally seen as some future combination of Jason Kidd. There were some unfair Pete Maravich comparisons thrown out there. Of course, the passing ability of Rubio, the court vision, was Maravich-y, but his shooting was never quite there. Pete Maravich was a big-time scorer. Ricky Rubio wasn't even really a big-time scorer over in Europe. And so that was a little bit unfair. But the Jason Kidd comparison, Steve Nash was somewhere in the middle on that scale. But the scouting report on him was basically eyes in the back of his head, can see a player to a head, can really make passes on offense and fill passing lanes on defense because he can see a couple of plays ahead. He mastered the pick and roll in Europe, was fantastic in the pick and roll with, of course, big men who are generally less athletic and less talented than big men he was going to play with in the NBA. The fact he'd played professionally for so long and had appeared in the Olympics, played really well in the gold medal game against the United States at one point when he was like 17 or 18. So there was clearly a lot of momentum towards him being NBA ready from that perspective. The only real questions were related to his shot, which was inconsistent. And then also he, you know, his body was still very slight and he wasn't super fast or explosive. So the idea of him, you know, fitting kind of the mold of a, you know, maybe a young Jason Kidd made some sense. And in fact, when he did get to the NBA, his first few years really aligned pretty closely with Jason Kidd's first few years from a shooting split standpoint and also some of the rate-based metrics. Things haven't quite turned out in the same way. He's a little bit of a different player now, but those profiles matched up a little bit. Of course, comparing him to a Hall of Famer early on is always unfair, but that's the game that everybody plays prior to the draft. He was never going to be quite the shooter of a Maravich or a Steve Nash or even another Spanish point guard, Jose Calderon. He was never going to be quite that good of a shooter, but the idea that he could change speed and direction and see a couple of plays ahead on both ends of the floor made him an attractive pick towards the top of the draft. And that's exactly what ended up happening. Even if he didn't get picked in the top three picks, like was talked about as a real possibility. As it turned out, he slid all the way to the Wolves, who held the fifth and sixth pick in the best move of David Kahn's career, which of course, came just prior to the worst move of his career as the president of basketball operations with the Timberwolves. He had traded Mike Miller and Randy Foy to the Washington Wizards, for the sixth pick, but one of those two picks is what they acquired from the Wizards, which is just mind blowing that the Wolves were able to trade two, like, kind of, you know, essentially bench guys on a good playoff team in Foy and Miller, you know, both rotation players, but Miller on the wrong side of his career, the backside of his career, and Foy having been underachieving, and had some injury issues too. To be able to move both those guys to the Wizards and get back a top six pick is just unbelievable. So the Wolves had back-to-back picks at 5 and 6. It looked like at this point that they could take Ricky Rubio, Steph Curry. Of course, famously, they took Rubio at 5 and then took Johnny Flynn at 6. Flynn was the guy that they had targeted all along, and Kahn kind of punted to the scouts and said that the scouts loved him, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, went on his media tour of how two point guards could play together. We don't really know how quickly Ricky Rubio would have been ready to come over had the Wolves not taken Johnny Flynn at 6. There were rumors before the draft that Rubio was comfortable to stay over in Europe and play because he had a complicated buyout situation with his club there and was also in a good situation and wasn't incentivized to come immediately. Perhaps it took an extra year to bring him over because the Wolves also took Flynn and it was seen a little bit as a slight. Why wouldn't the Wolves take a guy who is likely going to end up at the two guard spot like Steph Curry? Of course, as we know now, Curry played a lot of effectively played point guard for has played much point guard for much of his career. But Rubio stayed over in Europe for two more seasons, and the Wolves eventually helped him with his buyout as much as they legally could based on the NBA's rules when it comes to paying for overseas buyouts. Rubio came over in time for the 2011-2012 season, which was going to be a lockout season. Rubio had already committed to come over, and he did. That was also Rick Adelman's first year as head coach, which we talked a little bit about in our podcast earlier this week, in our episode earlier this week. And so both Adelman and Rubio were new to the Timberwolves heading into the 2011-2012 season. Of course, the season didn't kick off until Christmas because of the lockout. So the Wolves' first game that season was December 26th. I was at the game. Ricky Rubio came off the bench for the Wolves. And in a loss to Oklahoma City, he had 6 points, six assists, no turnovers, and 26 minutes. Was electric, was fun in the open court. They went and lost to Miami the next night. And then back at home on the 30th, I was also at this game against the Miami Heat. Rubio had 12-12 off the bench in 31 minutes, shot 4 of 7, made both three-point attempts, 12 points, 12 assists, did have 5 turnovers, but was really, really good. Was a +9 in the game, plus minus. The Wolves lost a close game to the mighty Miami Heat. And then the following game, a couple nights later, New Year's Day in Dallas, the Wolves won by 17. Rubio had 14-7 in that game in just 26 minutes. He actually came off the bench for the first 10 games of his career, and then he was a full-time starter from that point on. And when it was all said and done that season, Rubio actually played more minutes per game as a rookie in the lockout shortened season than he did at any other point in his career to this point. Of course, who knows whether or not that had anything to do with his knee giving out in that game against the Lakers when he jumped out to guard Kobe in the closing minutes of what was a one possession game at the time against the Lakers on March 9th of that year. And with that torn ACL, a lot of the hopes and dreams of the Wolves and their fans came crashing down. The Wolves at the moment were two games above 500 that season. Rubio had 15 points, 10 assists in that game, had shot 42% from the floor, was playing really well. And the Wolves were on a three-game winning streak streak. We're playing the Lakers down to the wire. Unfortunately, he tore his ACL, missed the rest of that season, and then the first part of the following season. And really, that kind of tanked the 12-13 season for the Wolves, too. There were high expectations after this team was above 500 prior to Rubio's injury. Kevin Love had broken out as a bona fide star. So for the 2012-13 season, the first full year that Rick Adelman's in charge, the Wolves only won 31 games. Rubio was only able to play in 57 games that year, and clearly was favoring his knee when he came back. He was overall pretty good. Most of his numbers were in line with what he did in an abbreviated rookie season. His three-point percentage was down by about 5 points. That was really the only major issue, but clearly was still kind of working his way back into shape. The 2013-14 season was the season that had the most hope for the Wolves. They had a healthy Ricky Rubio. They had a healthy Kevin Love after some of the issues that he had in 12-13 with his injury as well. And the Wolves were seen as a team that could legitimately break out, become not just squeak into the playoffs, but a legitimate, you know, upper 40s win team. As it turned out, Rubio did start 82 games for this team. And this Timberwolves team did have the Pythagorean win-loss, or should have the Pythagorean win-loss mark of 48 wins, meaning that their point differential meant that they should have won 48 games this season. This was also the season where there was awful luck towards the end of games. The Wolves had terrible problems coming out of halftime, and then even more so in the fourth quarter closing games. Even though Rubio played in 82 games and Love played in 77 games, the Wolves had some injuries to some of their fringe players. Chase Budinger only played in 41 games. He was supposed to be a big part of this team. The Wolves, pretty early on, traded Derek Williams for Luke Richard Mbamute, and he was a pretty big part of the rotation as a defensive force. Nikola Pekovic only played in 54 games, so he missed 28 games due to injury. And the Wolves ended up relying a lot on Dante Cunningham to play power forward. Corey Brewer did play in 81 games and had one of the better seasons of his career. But other than this being the year of the outlet pass with Kevin Love and Corey Brewer, and Love scoring 26 and 12 and a half a game and shooting 38% from three, you know, this was just a really disappointing year for the Wolves. This is the only game in Rubio's career that he played all 82 games, and he was really good. It was the only season he averaged less than 10 points per game, scoring wise. But his shooting splits were actually decent. This was his best shooting year of his career to this point. He shot 38% from the field, which of course isn't great, but it was much better than the 35 and 36 he'd shot his first 2 years. He shot 33% from three, and of course was an 80% free throw shooter. He always has been. And his assist rate was really good. He actually led the league in steal rate for the second straight year. 3.6% steal rate, which was even Chris Paul was second. Rubio was first. His turnover rate was passable given how high his assist rate was. And he was shooting threes. About one out of every five of his shot attempts was a three, and he was making a third of them. So this was a starting caliber year for Ricky Rubio. He cemented himself as a bona fide starter, you know, kind of middle of the pack starter, not an all-star, but kind of that next tier of starting point guards where he could be, you know, the third star on a playoff team. The problem was that the Wolves really only had a couple of consistent scoring options. Kevin Martin played 68 games this season. I think he had a wrist issue where he missed 14 games, but he's averaged 19 points a game. Of course, he didn't do anything. He hurt the team defensively. Pekovic missed 28 games due to injury, but he scored 17 and a half points and averaged almost 9 rebounds a game too. So you had two guys, their second and third leading scorers, each combined to miss roughly a half of a season's worth of games, which meant that your next best scorer, so if some of those games overlap, you know, your next best scorer is Corey Brewer at 12 points a game, and Rubio is your next best player, you know, the best defender on the team. And losing those games to Kevin Martin and Nikola Pekovic put a lot of pressure on Rubio, on Brewer, on JJ Barea, who played a lot and really too much in crunch time, with no consistent outside shooting threat, with Martin off the floor, nobody to help Kevin Love when Pekovic was hurt, which meant that Dante Cunningham was playing a lot of minutes next to Love, and Love was starting to play the five more. Gorgui Dieng still wasn't a consistent part of the rotation this season. He became that way as the season went on. He was used more and more. But because of those lost games to Martin and Pekovic, there wasn't a consistent second scoring option to keep the Wolves in the game down the stretch. And because Rubio was never an offensive scoring threat, you know, obviously didn't create his own shot and wasn't a great spot up shooter, opposing teams could key in on Kevin Love in any of those games that Kevin Martin missed. And there wasn't really a legitimate other option to go to offensively. And that really hurt the Wolves' potential during that season. So the Wolves still won 40 games. They were a good team, and they had the point differential of a 48 win team. And that was the best Wolves season easily since the 2004 conference finals year. And that was thanks in large part to the 82 games played by Ricky Rubio and a fantastic 77 games played by Kevin Love. Headed into the 2014-15 season, the Wolves had just traded Kevin Love and acquired Andrew Wiggins after he was drafted first overall in that summer's draft. After Love had all but asked for a trade, Flip Saunders was now in charge. So the Wolves basically had rookie Andrew Wiggins, what was supposed to be a healthy Ricky Rubio, heading into the 14-15 season. And the head coach of that team now is also Flip Saunders. And so expectations were a little bit all over the place headed into this season. We're going to talk about the final 3 years of Rubio's career, the back half of Rubio's career in Minnesota here coming up next. After trading Kevin Love in the summer of 2013, the Timberwolves were going to rely on, summer of 2014, the Timberwolves were going to rely on a rookie Andrew Wiggins, who did ultimately win the Rookie of the Year, but also Ricky Rubio as kind of the veteran leader on this team. To a lesser extent, Kevin Martin, who is now 31 years old. Unfortunately, Rubio sprained his ankle early in the season and tried to come back. Unfortunately, only played in 22 games. It was not effective. This was the worst season of his career all the way around, unfortunately. And Kevin Martin only played in 39 games, averaged 20 points a game when he did play and shot 39% from three, but missed a ton of games due to injury. Wiggins was good, but inefficient. I mean, he was good for a rookie. He played in all 82 games. He was only 19 years old. The Wolves also had Thaddeus Young on the team. So there was a little bit of hope that there were just enough solid veterans to start the year that this team could be okay. And also Nikola Pekovic, et cetera, et cetera. The Wolves traded Thaddeus Young when it looked they were clearly not going to be good, in large part due to injuries. The Wolves moved Thaddeus Young for Kevin Garnett in February of 2015, the second part of that season. To that point, Pekovic had barely played. He only appeared in 31 games. Ricky Rubio only for the season only appeared in 22 games. Kevin Martin only appeared in 39 games. Corey Brewer only played in 24 games for this team and was ultimately traded. And so really the Wolves were in this weird transition between, you know, they had a number of these guys who had been solid contributors to a 40-win team the year before that should have been better than it was. But Saunders was starting to sell off pieces, still chose to sell Thaddeus Young essentially to the Nets for Kevin Garnett, who of course is 38 years old at this time. And that gave us one of those key moments that we talked about last week in Wolves history when Garnett came back to the Target Center. Emotional return. It was awesome. And the fit between Garnett and Ricky Rubio is actually really exciting because they have in a lot of ways similar mentalities. Rubio is maybe a little less cutthroat on the court than Kevin Garnett at least acts on the court, but they both want to win just as badly. They're both extremely passionate. They're both extremely emotional on the court, are pumping their teammates up, you know, maybe in a little bit of a different way, but there's a lot of similarities in their personalities and in the way that they approach the game. And so the fit with Garnett and Rubio, hoping to lead this team, you know, kind of developing the next year, Karl-Anthony Towns is the first overall pick by the Wolves. Of course, tragically, Flip Saunders passed away that next fall. And so Sam Mitchell was the interim coach for this this team that was Ricky Rubio led. Karl-Anthony Towns is a rookie, Wiggins' second year. And the team actually won 29 games, given that this was Towns' rookie year and that Wiggins was still only 20. Zach LaVine's second year with the team as well. You know, kind of turned into, he played a lot of point guard as a 19-year-old rookie. Now he was more of a coming off the bench most of the time, played a little bit of the one, but a lot of the two. Kevin Martin still on this team, but didn't play much. This team was decent, you know, won 29 games, probably could have won a few more, had some problems at the end of games. Sam Mitchell's offense wasn't always, you know, the best fit. Wiggins scored 20 a game again. Rubio had 10 points a game and almost 9 assists a game. Had another Rubio-like shooting season with his splits in the upper 30s for field goal percentage and low 30s for three-point percentage. And Rubio was mostly healthy, played in 76 games. And there was definitely some light at the end of the tunnel here, thinking that Wiggins and Towns and LaVine, led by Ricky Rubio, could kind of transition into this next phase in Wolves. In Wolves history. Unfortunately, that didn't exactly happen. Sam Mitchell was let go after the season. Tom Thibodeau was brought in, and there was reason to believe that this would be successful and that Rubio would be a good fit for Tom Thibodeau because of his focus on defense and how good Rubio is defensively. Again, led the league in steal rate, I think, three times over his first four seasons in the league. The Wolves won 31 games in Tibbs' first year as head coach. Rubio had a good year from a scoring perspective, and Tibbs challenged him to do more offensively. For the most part, he did that. He shot over 40% from the field, struggled a little bit from three, just under 31% there, but averaged a career high to that point, 11.1 points and 9.1 assists per game. Towns was really good in his second year in the league, averaged 25 and 12. Wiggins kind of took a step sideways in his first year under Tibbs, but for the most part was showing signs of improvement. Of course, the following offseason, Tom Thibodeau got impatient, decided to basically flip the roster except for Towns and Wiggins, traded Zach LaVine, traded Chris Dunn, who he drafted to eventually maybe replace Rubio at point guard, to the Bulls for Jimmy Butler. At the moment of the Butler trade, Rubio is still on the roster. So there was some thought that perhaps there's a Rubio Butler backcourt and this team would just be phenomenal defensively. Unfortunately, Tibbs decided to trade Rubio for a first round pick. And the Wolves ultimately selected Josh Okogie with that pick. And the jury is somewhat still out on that, but it wasn't bad value in trading Ricky Rubio to get a mid first round pick. But then the Wolves overpaid Jeff Teague to come to Minnesota. And unfortunately, the ball dominant nature of Jeff Teague, yet his inability to consistently and willingly shoot three pointers, really kind of dragged down the Wolves offense. And while Tom Thibodeau's always preferred to have scoring point guards on his roster to a pass first guy like Ricky Rubio, Jeff Teague's issues defensively, and again, his unwillingness to shoot threes, but yet still want to have the ball in his hands and over dribble at times, his struggles with entry passing to the post, all were kind of issues. While the Wolves won 48 games, went to the playoffs in that season with Teague and Jimmy Butler. Once Butler was gone the following year, Teague wasn't a fit with this roster. And Ricky Rubio obviously would have been a better fit for what this team was trying to do. Giving the ball to Butler, letting him dominate the offense, I think hanging on to Ricky Rubio and not signing Jeff Teague would have been better from a cap perspective. It would have been better for the team that season. And also long-term, whether or not Rubio would have stayed in Minnesota when his contract was up, or if he still would have left in a couple of years, it's unclear. But I think he would have been a better fit for the roster at that time. As it is though, Rubio played 6 years in Minnesota. He was, his arrival was again, the fifth biggest off the court moment in Wolves history, as it really kind of signaled somewhat of a victory for at the time, David Kahn, for owner Glenn Taylor to get this guy to come over after 2 years playing overseas. He was supposed to be, you know, the second coming of some combination of Pete Maravich and Jason Kidd and, maybe Steve Nash. Obviously that wasn't quite the case. But those comparisons were always pretty unfair to Rubio. And as it turns out, he still makes the list of the best point guards in Wolves history. He ranks very highly in Wolves history when it comes to total assists, even games played. Some of those numbers, he really started to kind of vault his way up that those franchise record rankings simply because of the high volume of minutes he played. The overall assist numbers, he's second in Wolves history in assists. He's over 1,000 ahead of Pooh Richardson. And of course, is 1,300 behind Kevin Garnett because Garnett played in almost three times as many games with the Wolves. On the all-time steals list, he's second only to Kevin Garnett in Wolves history. On the all-time minutes played list, Ricky Rubio's eighth in Timberwolves history. Games played, he is 10th in Wolves history. Scoring, of course, he's going to be further down that list, but he's still 15th in Wolves history, only slightly behind. He's 36 points to be exact behind Pooh Richardson. When it comes to overall points scored in a Wolves uniform, but being second to Garnett in steals, second to Garnett in assists, implies, you know, just how big of an impact he had on this organization in just 6 years. He's also 15th in franchise history in rebounds. He's a good rebounding point guard and always was. And so those things matter. If you look at a ranking of best Timberwolves or most impactful Timberwolves players of all time, he's definitely in that conversation, as we talked about in our series counting down the best players in Wolves history just a few weeks ago. Definitely that moment, as I mentioned a moment ago, when he came to Minnesota was kind of a seminal moment in Wolves history. It makes that top five list of top off the court moments and is definitely extremely memorable to Timberwolves fans who have kind of slogged through the last 15 plus years of this team largely being non-competitive. And Rubio's arrival signaled something that everybody hoped would be a little bit different, and it brought some joy for a few years. And unfortunately he left in a not as exciting fashion, kind of unceremoniously traded by Tom Thibodeau, that summer and being replaced by a player that was not a fan favorite in Jeff Teague. But here's to Ricky Rubio. Here's to what should have signaled an exciting moment in Wolves history. And what was a good career in a Timberwolves uniform. Of course, he's now spent 2 years in Utah, got to the playoffs both years, and is in his first year in Phoenix, and is doing a good job with a young Phoenix Suns team that has been better than I think a lot of people expected. So we'll see what he does moving forward in his career. Now Rubio is going to be entering his age 30 season next year, and will be interesting to see what his role looks like with the Phoenix Suns, if he can lead them to the playoffs or if he ends up getting moved as they continue to kind of build that team up and try and build a playoff contender down there in the desert. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. A final special thanks to our friends at Built Bar for bringing us today's episode. Visit builtbar.com. Use promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first order. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.